Welcome, welcome, welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch, Justin Kinney. Yes, we are back, finally.
Your long national nightmare is over, folks. We are back.
International.
Yeah, that's true. Worldwide.
So we are back. Apologies. Justin had some family things come up last week. I actually had some family things come up this week, so we shifted times around. And here we are. We are back, and you know what? Between the time
we miss
gone,
anything?
IndyCar not video game scrapped. Andretti Global F1 engine deal moves forward. And Graham Rahal seat confirmed for next year with Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing. Outside of that, though, we didn't miss anything.
Yeah, it was a relatively calm couple weeks. Nothing too insane, but we'll break down everything that happened in IndyCar and maybe more. We'll see.
Yeah, a little bit of F1 with the Las Vegas Grand Prix happening this weekend
off
here.
Off to a banging start.
Yeah, literally, here in the U.S., so probably talk a little bit about that as well. So I think the lead story, and this has been beaten into a drum, but this is kind of the main thing that happened as far as with IndyCar and the video game. So IndyCar terminated its license agreements with Motorsport Games. That is official.
Well,
that came a week after they paused development on the video game. So it was very delayed.
It was reactive. It wasn't proactive. They basically, Motorsport Games called it quits, and then IndyCar was like, all right, yeah, we're going to terminate the contract, as opposed to, I don't know, months ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those things where you kind of wonder, why is there such a long delay? Well, in this week's Racer.com mailbag, Marshall Pruitt reporting, I've been told by quite a few folks that at least one decision maker in Penske Entertainment's leadership team has deep ties to the company in question, aka Motorsport Games, which, if true, would explain how they got themselves into this mess. Remember, there was like the exclusivity clause, so IndyCar dropped iRacing, and we talked about, I think you and a lot of people listening, you know, into the podcast back when this happened, which was what, the end of 2022, right?
Yeah,
it was like a 2-year deal. Basically said, this is terrible. Like, this is terrible for IndyCar and everything. Well, they were not wrong, because this ended up being a horrible, horrible deal for IndyCar and did not do IndyCar any favors at all.
Now, here you are with nothing. You don't have a console game on the horizon. You don't have iRacing going on. You need to jump through hoops to find really any type of IndyCar sim racing out there whatsoever with mods and stuff like that. Is just terrible. And interestingly enough, finding that out, of course it was a high ranking Penske employee that had his or her hands all over this. It's just absurd. And now IndyCar is effectively up the creek. They're no closer to a console game than they were when they originally made this deal, which is just terrible.
Yeah.
And not even just a console game, but online, like iRacing, like there's nothing. You have nothing.
There is nothing. Like, and the worst part is there was nothing before, and now there's certainly nothing now. The only hope is that IndyCar goes back to iRacing, but again, and NASCAR has gone to iRacing.
Right.
They dropped Motorsport Games. And once NASCAR dropped Motorsport Games, the writing was on the wall, right?
Yeah,
and
NASCAR,
the fact that
was
IndyCar
proactive,
held out, like you said, reactive, that was all we needed to know. Like, there had been story after story for months, let alone over a year, right? Basically saying that Motorsport Games had issues. But
they stayed with them, right? They stayed loyal, seemingly now coming out because of a personal connection with somebody high up in Motorsport Games. Just absurd. And IndyCar got burned for it. And now here we are, everybody else, very heavy with Formula One has an annual game. NASCAR has a couple annual games, iRacing, all that stuff. And you have IndyCar nowhere to be found in terms of gaming. And that's the problem. IndyCar always just seems to be chasing itself. And you have so many people in power that aren't in touch with what young people are into, that you're just left looking stupid.
And the fact it took basically a week, when the writing was for sure on the wall with the issues that Motorsport Games was having after the layoff announcements a couple weeks ago, It took a full week for IndyCar to officially drop the platform. Like,
they were still giving it the Motorsport Games the benefit of the doubt. And it's just, it's absurd. You know, at 40 years old and at 41 now, and I had a job with my current company that was social media. And at some point I reached, you know what? I'm not the person to be running this. You need somebody younger. And that's the same thing with IndyCar in terms of putting people in positions in which they know what the demographic wants. And it just seems like IndyCar is incapable of bringing in and hiring and putting in positions of power young people that know that they stress how much they need to reach the younger demographic, but they make no moves to put people in positions that best know what those people want and allow them the freedom to pursue that. It's all about social media, and I get it, that's important, but just the decision makers are still aging men in positions of power with IndyCar, and that does not help you whatsoever. I'm 41 and I have no idea what kids want. You think 60 and 70 year olds know what kids want? 50 year olds? Absolutely not. But this is kind of where you're at with IndyCar. It's just kind of a good old boys club, basically.
You had NASCAR drop Motorsport Games. You had BTCC drop Motorsport Games. You had the entire IndyCar development team laid off at Motorsport Games. But yet, IndyCar held on until just a couple of days ago as we record here on Friday, November 17th here in the U.S.,
and I'm
Friday
sure
morning.
They didn't have any other option because it's not like they cut off iRacing. I'm sure iRacing is like, now what are you going to do? And they have no other alternative.
The only positive in all of this from Mike Straw Media, no matter what happens, IndyCar is due its minimum guaranteed annual payment for Motorsport Games within 60 days at the start of 2024. Should it not pay, IndyCar can revoke the license. Well,
they
don't think they're going to pay.
License.
They've revoked the license.
I don't think they're getting any money from Motorsport Games.
It is what it is.
And maybe that's an issue because IndyCar probably has no other company lining up to pay IndyCar money to produce a game.
No, because there's just not enough of a draw. F1, yes.
Totally.
NASCAR, yes.
Mm-hmm.
IndyCar, just get it back on iRacing because your diehards were already there before. You're catering to them with exactly what they wanted. You left them and have nothing to show for it.
At the very least, get back on iRacing. And maybe that's just what it should be. Because I don't think IndyCar's brain trust is capable enough to making the decisions to get a console game off the ground. It's a bunch of middle-aged and older people thinking they know what younger people want, and they really don't know. And they hold such power that they refuse to allow younger people to be able to make decisions that are more in touch with what younger demographics want. And isn't that the core issue of one of the core issues with IndyCar is you have people that are making the decisions that are past their prime, that are over the hill, that are too dead set in their ways to cater the series more to younger people. And that goes between video games, between exciting events, between taking chances in new markets, all that stuff.
Yeah.
New cars.
Well,
I mean, isn't that all come
new
back to
new engine formula? I get that they're adding the hybrids, but the engine formula is the same because they weren't able to attract a third
correct
OEM to change it.
It's all just people that are out of touch with where the sport of motorsports is going the next 10, 20, 30 years.
I will say this because it does sound like we're piling on, but if your most negative off-season story to point is this
so
Motorsport
far
Games thing, which is something everyone saw coming to begin with, it's not too bad. You have a grid that could be 27, 28 cars, and you've added that thermal race, which, again, some people see as a negative. Others, like us, see as a positive. It's a one-off event. Let's not read too much into it. It just seems to me there's some a lot of good still, but yes, old cars, old engine formula, you're not really innovating a whole lot, which is something that defined IndyCar up until, 2005, basically?
Yeah.
That innovation was key. And yes, they're still innovating on a safety side, but in terms of a performance side, they've stopped that for the better part of 20 years.
And what's interesting is the people, especially people that want to go back to this, that, or the other, is instead of going forward, instead of being innovative, which has has been a constant in this sport and in this series for a long time, they'd instead want to just hold on to the past or stay in the past or return to the past. And that's not how you stay relevant. And it wasn't the deal, that wasn't the case in the 60s or the 80s or the early 2000s. You always had to look forward. And at one point, the series and the sport was looking forward. It just no longer feels like that. It's just constantly playing catch up. And I think the video game saga is just another example of that.
So what's next for IndyCar in a video game? Well, Mike Straw Media, who's been all over this story, says sources close to the situation tell me that IndyCar has been and continues to explore all available options when it comes to bringing a game to console. I don't think there are many options available right now.
Well, when you look at who makes the video games, F1 has a tremendous video game. If you've not played it, if you're interested in it, go and check it out. Codemasters has made that game, and it's been tremendous for several years. It's much more exciting than the on-track product in reality, but I don't know if Codemasters is interested in making an IndyCar game, quite frankly. It's under the EA banner. I would imagine they would have went with Codemasters to begin with if there was an option, but I would think I would call a meeting again with those folks and see what would it take. Would it take a monetary investment by IndyCar to get it off the ground? I don't know, but I think that's your best bet. If you want a console game, look at those that do it the best, and in my opinion, that's Codemasters.
Yeah, I think that's the best option. It's just, is Codemasters interested, right? That's always the ultimate question in these situations.
A two-way street. And maybe IndyCar has to make some concessions and put up some money to make it happen with Codemasters. But if you've played any of the F1 games of late, just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a long way to go on that. And for IndyCar, well, it's back to the drawing board. Hopefully you go back to iRacing in the short term and you figure out something long term. But again, it's a niche sport, right? It doesn't have the global popularity of an F1, doesn't have the domestic popularity here in the U.S.
of a NASCAR.
Of NASCAR.
Yeah.
And so it's just, or even really the global popularity of MotoGP, right? So there's,
true. And MotoGP there's just, has a game.
There's a lot to overcome. And for IndyCar, I think that's probably the biggest issue, is it's just simply not popular enough.
And the people that are frustrated about wanting a game, even if today Codemasters came out and say, yes, we're going to develop an IndyCar game, you're looking at least a 2-year turnaround, because none of that Motorsport Games is going to be able to be translated over. So you're starting from scratch. So even if you got off the ground today, you're looking at minimum 24 months. To make it a good one. And that's the thing. Does IndyCar try to now rush something with somebody? You got to make sure it's good. And unfortunately, to make that happen, it's going to be a timely process, even if it started now.
Yeah. It is what it is, right?
I think you just kind of have to accept
that's
and
where
unfortunately, it's not. So, like you said, we saw the writing on the wall with Motorsport Games 4 months. 4 months, maybe even a year plus, that this was the end game. We knew this was going to be an end game. You were holding out hope, but with layoffs and stock going down and all that stuff, you just knew this was going to be the end game in the end, unless something drastic happened.
All right. Well,
that's the show. Thanks for listening.
Other news for IndyCar in the last week. First off, we'll get to the F1 element for Andretti Global after this, but the first story is, well, they made it official. Andretti is running 3 IndyCar entries next year. We knew this was a possibility, and they have a lot that they're trying to figure out, but it will be a 3-car effort full time. So it'll be Colton Herta, Kyle Kirkwood, and Marcus Ericsson. I don't like giving up that 4th leader circle spot, because you have it, but if you're not going to have a competitive entry, trimming down to 3 seems like the best option.
And I'm cool with getting rid of that 4th that grandfathered in, because that opens up a spot for another team that you could use the money much, much more than Andretti. Make no mistake, that's the most well-financed team in the paddock. And that's including Penske, from what I understand. I mean, there's just stupid money with it. I mean, they're looking at Formula One, right?
So, yeah, true. Well, they have a financial backer.
Correct.
And Dan Tauris, who's connected to Gainbridge. Like, that doesn't mean the IndyCar entries themselves are the best funded.
Correct.
But the team as a whole
is the most funded. But I would say they probably have the most assets of anybody in the paddock, including Team Penske. At least they're 1A, 1B. But it just felt like an unnecessary, in my opinion, a great move for Andretti, because you're not going to put a car out there just for a car, and you're not going, we need to run that fourth car because we need the money, because I think Andretti definitely has enough backing that you don't need to chase that money. And it opens up a leader circle spot for somebody that could use that money. But for Andretti, it's lean. Let's go with three. Let's make sure they're the best that we can possibly make. And in going forward, improve there. I always thought, and we've said it before on the podcast, it just felt like a bloated team, and you had four cars just for the sake of having four cars. Now you trim to three. That's now one less excuse for Andretti, is now you're down to three with now making the best of the best in terms of crew and engineering staff and all that you need to produce.
And they expect to run four cars for the Indy 500. Obviously, that fourth entry would be for Marco Andretti, and Marshall Pruitt saying the racer.com mailbag that he expects this could possibly be Marco's final Indy 500 attempt.
Wouldn't be surprising.
He says, I do wonder if this might be his final attempt. And that would not surprise me either.
I don't know. I could see Marco's doing the 2024 race, stepping away for a couple years, and at some point coming back for a swan song or something. I don't know if this is his last one. It could be his last one for a couple years.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not been competitive recently in the 500. And you just wonder, you know, do you want to keep running if you're not competitive? Because he was competitive running full time for many years, including winning the pole, you know, in his last full time IndyCar season for the Indy 500. But since he's come back as a one-off, and he's not been competitive at all in the race.
Marco's not going to just show up and race just to race. He's come a couple hundred feet from winning the Indianapolis 500. He's appeared in it over 15 times?
Well over that, yeah.
I mean,
close to 20.
The novelty has worn off in terms of being in the race. He's come so close to winning it. He's not showing up just to race. He wants to be competitive, and if he's not, he's not going to race in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really the biggest thing is, you know, he doesn't want to keep wasting his time. And I do think, though, having four cars instead of five will probably help that fourth entry also be more competitive.
I would absolutely agree. Is lean and mean, and that's what Andretti is hoping to do in 2024.
This would be his 19th. I was counting 19th. Up the tally. If he competes in 2024.
So closing in on 20.
But hasn't finished in the top 10 since 2017. He was eighth that year. Obviously won the pole in 2020, but finished 13th, which is his best finish since 2017.
The one-offs haven't worked so well for Marco.
No, they have not. Elsewhere in IndyCar driver news, Graham Rahal back with Rahal Letterman Lanigan for next year. It's a multi-year extension, and my guess would be perhaps his final IndyCar contract. At least as a full-time driver?
It looks like that it's going that way as he's become more and more of a businessman slash driver. And with his kids, as they get older, I could definitely see that as a possibility. I think he's going to be racing for a couple more years, but you're really going to see that bridge continue between father and son in terms of being the heir apparent to that team.
And with the success he had, two poles in the final four races, yes, they did not have success on ovals last year as far as the Rahal team, but the success they had later in the season, you wonder if that momentum carries over to next year and this team is a lot stronger. I mean, they should be in theory, right? You have Graham Rahal back, you have Christian Lundgaard back, you add Pietro Fittipaldi, which, yes, limited experience in IndyCar, but has shown flashes and has raced in F1. You just wonder, will this team continue to take a step forward? Will they flatline or will they fall back?
Well, that's the biggest thing for Graham Rahal is the strides that this team made in the second half of the season is what clinched it for him to return. And he's going to want to continue that momentum heading into next year. But make no mistake, is Graham Rahal is the face of this team, but by no means is he the best driver on this team. And I think that's a delicate balance to have in being a guy whose name is synonymous with the team, but a dude that probably isn't the number one guy in terms of talent anymore. But he's really hoping that they can figure it out on road and street courses and continue it on ovals and really find some things in 2024.
So that announcement set as far as driver news. You had some other announcements in lights. Jacob Abel back with Abel Motorsports. This is not a surprise. We kind of expected that to happen. And then a lot of driver announcements we'll get to in news and notes as far as IndyCar in relation to sports cars. But where things stand, I think there's not a lot left to fill out, right? But with what is left, it's going to be a lot of jockeying for those remaining seats at Foyt and Coyne. At Foyt, they tested Enzo Fittipaldi a couple weeks ago. He's certainly projected to be a factor. And another silly season update for Marshall Pruitt. Coyne and Foyt, I mean, that's where things are at. We know that Andretti Global, basically, we believe they're done. Ray Hall could add that fourth car now with that fourth or that extra Honda lease becoming available.
Yuri Vips, you're up.
Yeah, he could run a partial schedule. So now it just comes down to who fills those seats.
And we have some good ideas of who's going to be in that seat. Sounds like with Foyt could have maybe one change, but it sounds like they want to bring back Santucci and have him some continuity there. Benjamin Peterson out there. So,
and not a done deal. He returns, right? True. Even though I think
if they find money, they want him back. But if Foyt can't find money, they're going to have to have somebody that brings a bigger budget. So still questions out there, but we're really starting to zero in on what's going on.
Stingray Rob has been associated with that second Foyt entry that Benjamin Peterson drove. Basically, it's down to those two for the 55. Ferrucci will be back at Foyt once and if a complete budget is acquired for the 14. That, according to Marshall Pruitt, they want to keep Ferrucci. And then with Coyne, I have no idea. Enzo Fittipaldi, I mean, that'd be a good addition. But Coyne has no pressure to really do anything as far as hiring drivers anytime soon. You do want to get something done for hybrid testing, though.
Devlin DeFrancesco, I mean, Stingray Rob apparently has a huge budget to bring wherever he's at. So it continues to astound me that the people that don't qualify or aren't good enough, in my opinion, to be in the series somehow get financial backers that bring stupid money. I mean, for a while it was Sebastian Saavedra, right? Where he just somehow had this money. And now Stingray Rob is that guy.
Callum Ilott, Jack Harvey also could be at Coyne, but obviously, I mean, Coyne needs to find someone who brings a sizable budget. Devlin DeFrancesco and Stingray Rob would be the pairing to bring a lot of budget, but, you know, is that going to help you on track? You have a second-year guy, and you have DeFrancesco, who showed flashes in Andretti, but not really enough to feel like he's a true number one driver for a team.
I mean, not enough because it ended up being Andretti just got rid of that car. If they saw any type of potential in Devlin DeFrancesco, they have four cars, but they didn't. So now Devlin DeFrancesco is going to be somebody else's leftovers, and it could very well be Coyne.
So we shall see, but that's kind of the latest of where things stand, and I don't have a clue what direction they're going to go. I wonder if he does.
I know he has a lot of suitors. I just hope they have one experienced IndyCar driver as part of that team.
Mm-hmm.
Because other than that, I talked about it at length last week. Then what are you doing? What are you looking at long-term other than year-to-year survival?
Yeah.
And not being competitive.
And that's where they were at several years ago. And you hope that's what they get back to.
That's what I'm hoping.
So that's kind of where, not really a whole lot to come out that is super definitive that I could see as far as drivers and what came out within the last week. But that was kind of the main kind of little tidbits that trickled out as far as the silly season and where things are at. A couple news on some international tracks, a little tidbits we'll get to later on in the episode. Marshall Pruitt also reported in the mailbag Kalamila had the option to continue with Junkos if he agreed to the team's admitted contractual terms. He said, so I don't believe there was an attempt to ruin his chances to sign elsewhere. So again, we've kind of been on that, that it was not some big, again, if the team wanted to do what they wanted, what a lot of people thought they were doing as far as holding on to, they would have done so until December 1st, December 15th, whenever the contract expired, they let him go early. That's doing the driver a favor.
I don't think there was anything malicious in the timing or lack thereof.
I don't think so either. But that's,
I mean, anybody thinking that's this conspiracy theory, like imagine how damaging that would be for Junkos in trying to recruit any driver, because Callum Ilott, all he needs to do is go tell everybody the situation and said, yeah, they held on to me just for spite. That would just ruin you as a team in terms of trying to get drivers to come race for you. So no, I'm not buying into that conspiracy theory.
I'm not either. There's no benefit, right?
No, that's
the biggest thing.
You're ruining your reputation amongst drivers if you're doing that. So no, I don't think, was it maybe mishandled a little bit? Timing weird? Sure. Was it malicious? Was it intentional? No, it was not.
All right. So that's the latest on the IndyCar driver market and where things are at. But again, Ilott's best shot is obviously coin. And if that works, great. If not, I don't think he has an option as far as a full-time seat in 2024.
No, I don't think so. It's unfortunate the way it's gone for Callum Ilott, but if he wants a spot in 2025, I think he could have it. I'm sure he'll be in sports cars for 2024. And could he be an Indy 500 only guy? Could he be a late replacement late in the season for somebody that has not performed well and is out of a seat? Potentially. I think he needs to keep all of those options open heading into next year.
All right. And the other big story, and I get it, it's an F1 story, but it's related to an IndyCar team. Andretti Global got some good news, because GM had said previously a couple weeks ago they are only interested in partnering with a power unit for F1 in the future with Andretti Global. And then now GM officially announced it earlier this week that the Andretti Cadillac partnership will move forward. They will enter F1 as soon as possible in 2028. Andretti Cadillac will compete as a true American Works team. Obviously, this is another box checked for Michael Andretti's F1 bid. F1 declined to comment on GM's announcement, citing the ongoing process we are conducting. Yeah, this is just embarrassing, right? For F1 to continue to just not even acknowledge what's happening. They hate this so much, but they also probably realize there's not a lot they can do at this point to stop it.
They're just hoping that something falls through on the Andretti side, right? So they don't have to tell them no. But I still feel it's trending no, because while it doesn't come down to the teams, they have an enormous amount of say in what's going to happen. And you would think having a global brand like General Motors on board would help sway that, because make no mistake, Andretti could be that initial team, the factory team for Cadillac GM, but it could grow. It could supply power units to a second team at some point. So it's just the short-sightedness of Formula One, because they see what it is now as opposed to what it could be. And they feel like they don't need this, that, or the other from the United States, but GM and Cadillac global brands that could add a lot to the series.
And GM's first foray into F1, if this moves forward. Look, I get it. They feel like they're in a good spot, but they might not be in a good spot after this weekend with the Las Vegas
Grand
Prix.
Not off to a good start.
No, certainly not with how things have happened in the opening practice session and fans escorted out and they got it right in practice too. And having a race in the middle of the night for most of the American fan base, just so it can be there for European fans. Just a lot of questions, a lot of issues, and maybe F1 will change their mind after this event, which was supposed to cost $500 million, cost $600 million, and I'm sure there will be more costs associated. We shall see.
I will say, caught the end of FP2 this morning, albeit with no fans there. It does look pretty cool with the course around the strip and Sunset Boulevard and all that stuff. in Vegas. It's a pretty cool environment, but the issues on the ground are considerable and continue to be prevalent throughout the weekend so far.
All right. So that wraps up some of the main headlines this week in IndyCar. If you agree or disagree with us, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us at newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, check out the email list. You can subscribe for free. You won't miss any episode or special announcements. That is free to subscribe. Also, you can check out the store. We have t-shirts and stickers for sale as well. On social media, follow us at IndyCar Podcast on Twitter/X and on Instagram. On Facebook, just search for New Track Record. And you can email us, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com as well. And let's see, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. You can support us on there. Thanks to Xavier, Rob, and others for their support each and every month, starting just $1 a month. And you can download episodes for free on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Overcast, CastBox, wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, all for free. Mailbag time, and Justin will try to abbreviate it as best we can because we had a lot of entries the last couple weeks over the video game stuff. Dopazo Rodrigo, this from the previous episode. Thanks again for a great episode. I heard Callum has parted ways with his manager after how this story ended. Yeah, I would part ways with my manager too after...
Didn't go well.
Grosjean replaced me in the seat. Beans B Card Blog saying, I have to say New Trek Record has 100% become my favorite IndyCar racing podcast. Thank you.
Who are these people?
Also, these real people. Roman Grosjean enjoys death threats. That's what Bean's saying. The way he drives, he's going to get more than Callum Ilott. We shall see. I hope that stops.
Definitely going to be a storyline to watch, too, with how, how Grosjean drives and
how fans handle it of the team.
That's for
the
sure.
Argentinian fans in particular. I don't know.
It's going
to
be...
This is his last chance as a full-time driver in IndyCar. He's got to produce.
He does.
All right. I posted this poll. What happens first? Third OEM, race outside the U.S. /Canada, IndyCar video game, Cleveland, MIS, Fontana. 80%, over 80% of you said a race outside the U.S. and Canada. Nearly 9% said IndyCar video game. 9% said Cleveland, MIS, Fontana. And just over 2% of you said third OEM.
There's no confidence in a third OEM, is there?
That's pretty bad, because that should be the first one. N.K. Harden said A.J. Foyt wins his fifth 500. Oof. Aaron J. Richmond, nobody thinks the third OEM is ever happening, with a crying emoji. Skyscraper Tree 1, an OEM leaves before one joins. Oof. FitJ1983 says Fontana happens first. Dopazo Rodrigo, Termas de Rio Hondo 2024 is still a thing, but we won't hear anything solid about it until at least after the 11-19 presidential election. So there's the update there. We'll have an update later on in news and notes for you on Argentina in another international race possibility. Scott Segrin said, needs a none in my lifetime category. Oof. Swinks NZ says, haha, IndyCar video game. Nice one. More chance of tracks and cars being added back into Forza Motorsport than a standalone game anytime soon. Gabo Weasel said the Fontana Super Speedway is dead. Yeah, but they're rebuilding it, right? I don't believe
it. Yeah, nah. Well,
I don't believe
it. I think it's going to be a short track. Sounds like it's going to be, but I don't know how that's conducive to IndyCar.
I'll believe it when I see it. Melvin Mack 0818 said, now ask which one we want to happen first. Well, I would say
third OEM.
Third
right?
OEM is the one you should want to happen first. Any other vote for anything else, it's not good for the sport. I don't know what else to say. And then Dopazo Rodrigo said, give it time as far as the race.
Well, the issue has been...
The election, inflation, everything.
Well, and then there's we can talk about it in a little bit about the tidbit that Marshall Pruitt dropped in the mailbag about Argentina, which we'll get to.
Yeah, not looking good for that short term or long term. A couple of thoughts on the IndyCar video game and nepotism getting in the way. Jeff Cerneski said maybe the decision makers' kids just played several of their games. Well, how can you play their games? They don't have games.
Even though, I guess, I'm talking about motorsport games, ones that have come out that have been not.
N.K. Harden said nepotism remains undefeated. Christos said, good old nepotism, double dipping, and a bit of skullduggery for pizzazz. And Blown Apex said, my real question is why nobody seemed to do a background check on the CEO of Motorsport Games back when this agreement was signed. If they had, maybe the whole thing could have been avoided. Well, Nepotism.
Just sounds like they're all good old boys looking after each other.
Yeah. That's why they didn't check on this. It is what it is. And unfortunately, the way that it is unfortunate, because you were never going to get what you wanted out of it.
No, my whole thing is, I know a lot of us want a console game for IndyCar. I would love to get one. I'd play it. I just don't think there's enough people. You cannot convince me that it's economically viable for IndyCar to make money, or a company, let's say Codemaster, stepping in and make money on a really good IndyCar game. I just have a hard time believing there's not enough people out there that would buy the game. Sure, you, I, and the majority of our listeners, the game, will buy it. Are there enough of those people? I have a hard time buying into. I think the best thing for IndyCar is to be on iRacing and be in Forza and all this stuff. That's where you can best serve your audience. I just don't see a console game making much sense if you want it to make money. And isn't that the goal?
Yeah, right. That is the goal. And Jeremy from HBG sent us an email. So Jeremy, throw in some thoughts on the video game. Again, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com is the email. Said, want to throw in my two cents and about the IndyCar video games. This is pretty long, so be patient. But said, but first, I would encourage you to check out the episode of They Create Worlds podcast titled Micropose Part 2 at about the 11-minute mark through about the 15-minute mark. Talk about an old game where a couple of partners were discussing a sim game. They're talking about you adjust this and adjust that and then do this, which leads to the question, where is the fun? And that is where I land on the IndyCar game situation. They should sign licensing and livery contracts with iRacing before the ink is dry on any separation agreement with motorsport games. That will only appease the hardcore fans. And let's face it, that is a fraction of the population. Yep. Let's talk about a couple racing game comparisons. You've got Mario Kart, which does have options of different tires and cars to some effect on the car, but the power-ups really determine a lot in this game. Anyone can pick up a controller and be at least competitive by getting power-ups. There's Trackmania, where the car is just a car. Power-ups and effects are all on the track. Anyone can pick up the game. This is about driving knowledge and track effect knowledge. There's iRacing, which is all about car setup. It's hard for the average person to pick it up and do okay. It is a time investment more than a game. I don't disagree there. IndyCar needs a console game to help them branch out and draw more fans. They need something like the above games have that makes them stand out. Something a casual fan can become a hardcore fan and a non-fan into a fan. And if the folks at iRacing have an idea like that up their sleeves, they aren't going to use it for IndyCar. They're going to use it for F1 or NASCAR before even thinking about IndyCar, because those fan bases are bigger and therefore have a bigger pile of money that iRacing can pull in. So as much as I want a new IndyCar game, I would just rather see IndyCar models in iRacing, Trackmania, Rocket League, wherever first, than a new standalone IndyCar game. Because finding someone with a good idea that won't use it, chasing a bigger pile of money, is going to be difficult. Thanks for reading my rant.
No, it makes a lot of great points in terms of where can IndyCar get into that is going to raise its profile without having to create its own console game. I think the emailer mentioned a lot of those things. I would also throw in Forza. I would also throw in, I don't know if this is a thing or not, if NASCAR has ever been in Fortnite, but my son went crazy this week because Lewis Hamilton is now in Fortnite. And that's when you're talking about pop culture, when we're talking about sporting events, and my son first found out who Patrick Mahomes was because he came in Fortnite, and now Lewis Hamilton is in Fortnite. Like, what does IndyCar need to do to get on that type of thing? That would be exponentially bigger than any console game out there for IndyCar, because you're trying to cater to casual fans. A console game is just going to be to diehards, and we've said it, the emailer said it, there's just not enough of them out there to make it financially successful, particularly if it's a really good AAA game, which is where it's well made and all that. That's the top of the top games, which is what you want. I just don't see the market there, and I think IndyCar fans need to realize that as much as you want a console game, there's just not enough of us out there.
That wraps up the mailbag news and notes time, and a lot of driver announcements in terms of related to IndyCar. So we'll try to get through all of them because it's a ton. First off, Marcus Armstrong competing in this weekend's Macau Grand Prix. So look for him there. That's pretty exciting. You also have, let's see, Wayne Taylor Racing Andretti. They've announced Brendan Hartley and Colton Herta endurance drivers for 2024. So there you go with that. You have, let's see, continuing on. It's shocking how many there are. You have James Hinchcliffe will be an endurance driver for FAP Motorsports and IMSA in 2024. You have Alexander Rossi, fourth driver for FAP Motorsports Rolex 24 Assault and IMSA. And Wayne Taylor Racing Andretti also added to its Rolex 24 roster. They've added F1 champion Jenson Button and, of course, Indy 500 winner Marcus Ericsson to their stable. And I think that finally covers it.
Yeah. That's last, huh?
Yeah. I think I saw like 60 entries for the Rolex 24. So
yeah,
obviously that's quite good. And then you have a lot of tracks with tickets on sale. You have renewals for St. Pete. Fans who purchase 3-day grandstand seats can renew for St. Pete. General public seating goes on sale December 1st. Detroit renewals open exclusively for ticket holders as well. For that event, you also have ticket sales open at Long Beach. Tickets on sale now for that event, April 19th through 21st of 2024. Barbara Motorsports Park, the 2024 Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix. Tickets are on sale now as well for that event. So plenty of events with tickets up for grabs now. And let's talk about some races that potentially could be on future IndyCar schedules. First off, you have Interlagos. This came from Formula Indy, which is a Brazilian account that covers IndyCar, I think, in Brazil, translating the Portuguese. But it says IndyCar and Interlagos still on the radar of Sao Paulo City Hall. This was what the president of SP Touris, Gustavo Pires, said last week during the launch event of the Formula E event. And then on the thread, so there are more. If Sao Paulo already hosts the three main FIA categories in 2024, F1, Formula E, and WEC, he's open to hosting other major events, including those sanctioned by other bodies, such as IndyCar itself and MotoGP. So still a possibility. I don't think that would happen, obviously, for 2024, unless we're talking off-season event, right? Maybe 2025.
And if, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Formula One just agreed to staying in Interlagos through 2030, so Formula One's not going away anytime soon in Brazil, which could be a good or bad thing when you look at IndyCar's possibilities. And also, NASCAR continues to sniff around about an international race. We've heard about Montreal. That's not going to happen for 2024, but I would not be surprised if some of these overtures of potential IndyCar races in South America, if NASCAR is able to come in and say, we'll take that. If you can't figure it out, we'll take it. And if you had to put a bet on it, who races next in South America first? Is it IndyCar or is it NASCAR? And let's throw Central America in that too. Let's throw Mexico and all that.
Would I'd say NASCAR, because I think NASCAR in Mexico is more likely to happen.
I do think so too. So we've
quicker.
We've talked over the last several months about Mexico and IndyCar and Argentina and IndyCar and Brazil and IndyCar. The longer it goes without something substantial happening, the more likely it is that Cup is going to swoop in and get one of those locales.
Now, Marshall Pruitt on Brazil said, I believe an inquiry was made from a group in Brazil, but I've not heard of it moving beyond just that, an inquiry. And then what he had to say about Argentina, this was fascinating. He said, although I'd love to go to Argentina for an IndyCar race, I'm not sure it's something most teams are keen to do. Not with a busy off-season of hybrid testing and busy season of racing ahead and the limited financial reward and the one-time visit that's been proposed.
So this would not be an annual event. This is a one-off, is
which
what it sounded
is
like.
It's not a lot of value to teams, obviously.
Which maybe that's one of the hang-ups for it. But all indications were when we were talking about this, and maybe we just assumed, was that this could be an annual event on the schedule. But Argentina apparently looking at it as a one-off. And make no mistake, and a texter mentioned this, these countries are dictated a lot more about by the governments than the United States. It's a lot of these decisions come down to
government
federal
funding
governments.
Pays Correct. For a lot of these major sporting events.
It's not like the United States where you just have promotions, well, you have promotional groups and entities and stuff all over the country that are willing to front the money for these events. There's not as much money in Argentina and Brazil. It really takes a concerted effort from the government, from local to municipal to federal, to make these things happen. So it's more impactful with elections and who's in office and who's not in office than what you see in the United States at the federal level. And that's kind of what it sounds like is hanging up Argentina right now, and very well could be Brazil as well.
All right. So that wraps up international race talk. Nothing on a third OEM this week. A couple other notes to get to. Tony Kanaan got to drive Ayrton Senna's MP4 610 at Sonoma Raceway earlier. In fact, last weekend, obviously a dream for him to be able to drive that race car. And as McLaren had
the
dream test day. And obviously that was a big thing for him to be able to drive that car. The IMS Museum officially closed. It'll reopen April 2025. But Arnie Shribben pointing out the gift shop will remain open during renovation. It'll move to the smaller building just west of the museum. So keep that in mind. You can still check out the gift shop. John Oriovitz, Octane Press, in his book Indy Split, they're having a November sale. Indy Split, five other racing titles on sale for $15. Octanepress.com. You can check that out. So good Christmas gift
Definitely.
For someone.
If I hadn't got Indy Split last year for Christmas, I would say get me Indy Split, please.
Yep, same deal. And 97 F1 world champion Jacques Villeneuve got married in the chapel in the Las Vegas paddock
before
the
that?
F1 weekend. So started off with a bang. And Kevin Harvick, this is a NASCAR story, but it's too good not to share. He bought Ricky Bobby's North Carolina mansion that was used in the Talladega Nights movie for $6.75 million. I know Adam Stern tweeted about this. You can find stories about it. It's been remodeled, so it looks very different.
Yes.
Compared to how it looked in the movie.
Still a lavish residence.
Yes. All right. Tweets of the week time. And there are several because it's really across multiple weeks. You have Enzo Fittipaldi, tweeting, IndyCar was an absolute beast to drive. I had so much fun, especially when I let my brother pass me. We waved at each other. Ha ha. And Pietro Fittipaldi, Fitty, said, I was not waving. It was another gesture. You ruined my lap. That was great. Scott McLaughlin, S. McLaughlin 93, dropped my phone on my face this week, and now I have a black eye. Hashtag off season. And Graham Rahal, if that broke a car, talking about Carlos Sainz running over the manhole cover and it ruining his car. Graham said, if that broke a car, they love Detroit.
Oh, they would. Well, you know, it's the wooden bottom and so close to the ground. It wouldn't work at Detroit or even some other road courses for that matter.
Anything that we missed? I know it's been a couple
weeks.
I don't
think so.
We probably missed something.
Yeah, probably. But what else is new on this show?
Yeah.
Whatever.
but that is where things are at. And they apparently were not welding the manhole covers. They're filling them with cement.
Probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
I would imagine they're now redoing it, maybe even before FP2, that they were welding those shut as opposed to using cement.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work, but
at the very least, you want to watch practice now.
Yeah.
What's going to happen in FP3?
Watching the race weekend? Live, if you're in the Eastern time zone like we are, good luck because it starts at 1 a.m. Eastern.
And I know there's been a lot of people that have been taking to social media about how stupid it is. Just look at it. Like, this is more of a Vegas event. Okay. They're not making this to cater to the TV market in America. If they were, this race would be run at 8 o'clock Eastern time. It's not. They're not targeting that. And it's an international event. So they're looking at it as this is a destination of event for people in America, and it's going to be something to watch for international fans. It's not made for the United. We had Miami and Coda to fill that. This is for residents of Vegas and international fans. So I'm just kind of tired of the people complaining about the time that it's on. It's not for you. It's not for us. So if I want to watch, I'm going to record it and watch it on Sunday.
Well, I wouldn't say it's for the residents of Vegas because they're certainly not thrilled about it.
Well, of course, they're talking to the people that are negative about it, but I'm sure there's a fair amount of people after this weekend that are going to be excited about the money they make with business owners and casino owners. Like, it's benefiting some people, but you can pick the narrative whether you want to talk about the negative or the positive.
And not offering refunds to the people who
that's a negative
couldn't attend FP2?
F1 so far has not done a good job at controlling the negatives. That's for sure.
All right. With that said, time now for our random split era driver of the week.
I swore we did this guy, but he's not on my list.
Yeah.
So we're just going to roll with it with Anthony Lazzaro, who appeared in 2001 and 2003 for Sam Schmidt Motorsports. Excuse me, 01 and 02. And he did the Gateway race in 2001 was his lone appearance.
Outside of Texas.
I'm sorry. So he did Texas and Gateway. Year after, he came back and top 10s at Homestead and then as at Nazareth. Did not qualify for the 2002 Indianapolis 500. Overall, did 6 races over the course of 2 years. He won the 1995 Hooters Formula Cup with 6 wins and 9 poles. And I'm sure our buddy Michael McIntyre has that VHS tape somewhere that we could watch that. Also, did a couple then Nextel Cup races in 2001 and 2005. He was a ringer for road course race at Watkins Glen for 2001 and 2005.
And it did not qualify at Sonoma.
Correct. But it was just 6 and done for him in IndyCar or IRL at the time with Sam Schmidt Motorsports. And he was a dude that did some Craftsman truck races, did a race there, did actually Chicagoland in 2000. Did some Xfinity series as well. But that was pretty much it in his career in IndyCar or then IRL racing for Sam Schmidt Motorsports.
From Charleston, South Carolina. Don't let the name fool you. He's an American.
He is an American. And looking at that 2002 Indianapolis 500 qualifying effort and looking at the... let's see the qualifying here. Did he even make a qualifying run? I'm looking at now. He was replaced by Jimmy Kite in his qualifying run.
I have Jimmy Kite's autograph on a hero card somewhere. I don't know where, but I have it. Royal purple car.
Yes. Now he stalled during his initial qualifying attempt and then was replaced by Mark Dismore.
There you go.
So just a musical chairs, and Mark Dismore did qualify in the 33rd and final spot of the race. But yeah, Anthony Lazzaro replaced by Jimmy Kite, who was replaced by Mark Dismore, that eventually made the race. So that was his one and only opportunity to qualify for the 500, and that's Anthony Lazzaro.
Other names who failed to qualify, Robbie McGee waved off, Oriel Servia, rookie year, waved off, John Herb didn't make a qualifying attempt, Johnny Herbert was replaced by Mimo Gidley and withdrew. John DeVries replaced by Scott Harrington. Scott Harrington waved off. Billy Rowe was bumped. Anthony Lazzaro, as we mentioned, replaced by Jimmy Kite. And then Jimmy Kite, who stalled during a qualifying attempt and was replaced by Mark Dismore, as you mentioned, final driver to make the race. That 2002 field is like a who's who. Ayrton Dare, Shige Hattori. You have Jeff Ward, Max Pappas. A lot of great drivers, don't get me wrong, but a lot of like random split or driver, George Max, rookie year, Billy Boats, Alex Barron, Rick Treadway.
Oh, it's a
Robbie Gordon competed, Scott Sharp, Robbie Buell, Greg Ray, Richie Hearn,
the golden age of the 500, right?
no, one could say,
maybe the bronze age.
There are a lot of former winners, Elio, Buddy Lazier, Kenny Brack, Ari, Little Al, Eddie Cheever. And a lot of names, Michael Andretti, Jimmy Vassar, Dario was a rookie, Paul Tracy. I mean, you got to remember, that was the controversial Elio PT finish.
So I was going to ask you, who won that?
A lot of great drivers in that field. Raul Boissel, TK, Scott Sharp, Robbie Gordon, but Gilles DeFerrin, who went on to win the race, Hornish. So that was really when you were getting kart guys back and the IRL was basically taking over.
I will say the front row that year of Bruno Junqueira, Robbie Buell, and Raul Boissel leaves a lot to be desired, in my opinion. But
I remember that race. I do not remember Raul Boisel being in it. I can tell you that.
It was too. It was this was.
I remember
at least,
Junqueira winning the pole.
Yes, this was though the golden age of Brazilian drivers.
Yes,
in the series because you had. Let me count real quick. 7 Brazilian drivers start the race. 7 of the 33 were from Brazil, including 4 of the top 6. When you go Felipe Giafone and Tony Kanaan in the second row.
You had 8, I think I counted 18 American drivers, 7 Brazilian drivers. So there's your 25 out of your 33.
yes. Uh-huh.
And then several other countries represented. But yeah, a very talented field when you look back at it. But I do not remember Raul Boisel being in that race at all.
Anthony Lazzaro was not in that race either. He did not qualify, but he is this week's random split era driver of the week.
All right, for Justin Kinney, I am Caleb Hatch. That wraps up this week. We'll be off next week for Thanksgiving here in the U.S. unless something crazy happens.
Third OEM, fourth OEM.
Yeah, yeah. It takes something of that level, but we'll be off, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks here on New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.